Welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, and I'm just glad you joined us today. Please remember to tune in every Saturday morning. We're here at 10 a.m. on AM 1260. Now, my co-host, Kevin Passaro, and I are going to alternate schedules, so every other week you'll have the pleasure of listening to Kevin, and I hope you continue to tune in and listen to me as well. We have lots to bring you. And this show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com, and you can access that by going through myvillagegreen.com. The topics for today, we're going to have a variety of topics. We don't have a guest, and it gives me an opportunity to share some updates and news with you. We'll talk a little bit about medications and juices, when they mix and when they don't, about cherry juice and what it can do for sore muscles. Some of you may be already familiar with that. And we will talk about this phenomenon called leaky gut, what it is and why we have it. And then I'm going to cover what I call the paradigm shift. What was acceptable is no longer. And what has been very sacred in medicine and healthcare is suddenly on the chopping block. We'll be talking about mercury in amalgam fillings, fluoride in the water supply, additives and behavior, childhood behavior, and vaccines and autism. I want to also remind you that Village Green is there as your expert. You can go online, ask questions, and get advice, and you can always go visit them on Cedar Lane, the Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. They have plenty of experts there to help you with your questions about supplementation, diet, and medications. Now, let's get started. When meds and juices don't mix, many of you are aware of the dangers of grapefruit juice, but may not understand why. And you can have potentially harmful interactions that can occur if you use grapefruit juice and sometimes even the other citrus juices when taking certain medications. What happens is grapefruit juice contains compounds that inhibit what's called a very important enzyme, cytochrome P450A4. Now, this is found in the liver and the intestines, and I know those the names get confusing, but basically what happens is it's one of several enzymes that help us metabolize up to 70% of all medications, cytochrome P453A4. Now, grapefruit juice has naringin in it, and naringin converts to naringenin in the body, and what that does is it interferes with this particular enzyme, and therefore it interferes with metabolism. Now, juices such as grapefruit juice can be used therapeutically. There are some very expensive medications that are given in autoimmune conditions and to prevent the rejection of transplants. They're so expensive that to cut the cost, it is directed to be given with grapefruit juice. And the reason is grapefruit juice slows down the metabolism of this medication, and it keeps more of the medication in the bloodstream, so it reduces the expense by one-third. In other words, by taking a third of the medication, you get the power of the full medication if taken with grapefruit juice. But then things can go bad if you take the grapefruit juice with something and take the normal dose and end up with three times what should be the normal dose. The cholesterol-lowering drugs such as Lipitor, what we call the statins, also Mevacor and Zocor, they have this problem. If you take the grapefruit juice with those, you can get a toxic effect. Another group are the blood pressure-lowering calcium channel blockers, and they're called Plendil, Procardia, Calin. And the risk is that if you take grapefruit juice with these medications, you can get an extreme drop in blood pressure, as well as flushing, swelling of the extremities, headaches, irregular heartbeat, and in rare cases, a heart attack. With the cholesterol-lowering drugs that I just mentioned, you can also get headache and stomach aches, but the liver can get inflamed and muscle pain or weakness and neuromuscular damage can occur. There's also the antiarrhythmic medications that have an effect from the grapefruit. You can get heart arrhythmias as well as thyroid, pulmonary, that's lung, or liver damage. And sedatives can also be affected. Diazepam, which we call Valium, and Halcyon. And the risk is dizziness, confusion, and drowsiness. The effect is as if you took 3 times as much of the medication. Now, many of you experience these kinds of symptoms when you take a normal dose of a medication and you tell your physician, I always overreact, give me less. And many times the basis for the dosage that you're given is your body mass, when in fact what really counts are these enzymes that metabolize the medications in our gut and in our bodies, in our livers. So it's very, very important to tell your doctor, if you're one of those people, you have the grapefruit juice effect without taking the grapefruit juice. In other words, you don't metabolize the meds well, and more enters the bloodstream or stays into the bloodstream. So it's a real important thing to remember. Apple juice can also have an effect, and it can decrease the absorption of some medications if the juice is swallowed at the same time as the pill. So it's important to look this up. You can go online with any medication you're taking and find out about it. So apple, orange, and grapefruit juice decrease the absorption of allergy medications such as Allegra, antibiotics such as Cipro and Levaquin, antifungal medications such as Sporinox, blood pressure-lowering medications such as Atenolol, a beta blocker, and chemotherapy medications such as Topazar. So here we have another effect that you can reduce the absorption of these medications. And most people are not aware that apple juice can have that effect. Coffee. Coffee can interact with certain medications too. It's not a juice, but it's something we consume without thinking. And antacids, because coffee contains an acid, it counteracts the effectiveness of the over-the-counter antacids such as calcium carbonates and Maalox. Aspirin and caffeine, not a good mix. Increased risk of GI side effects, including ulcers. And bronchodilators can also interact with caffeine and increase the risk for nausea, vomiting, palpitations, and seizures. There's a lot more to this, and it's important to pay attention. Cranberry juice has an interaction with Coumadin, and it's very dangerous. You can have excess bleeding if you combine cranberry juice with Coumadin. So ask your doctor, but more importantly, ask your pharmacist. Don't take a medication without talking to a healthcare professional, especially a pharmacist, who knows all the medications you take and what you're eating. So this is good advice. I hope it's helpful to you. A little bit more about juices. Cherry juice for sore muscles. This is an old remedy, black cherry juice. But this is a recent study. I thought it was interesting. And when you exercise, particularly after taking time off, your muscles complain. They get tight, they ache, and they let you know they're not happy. You can take a warm bath and a massage, but you can also do something else. You can drink cherry juice. And actually, you can also purchase black cherry extract. That's pretty easy to take. It's been used for centuries to relieve pain from gout and arthritis. And today, some athletes actually have begun using it after a workout. And why would black cherry juice or cherry juice itself work? It was a nice little study in New York at the Nicklaus Institute of Sports Medicine and Athletic Trauma. And they asked college students, they divided them in half, of course, and to drink 12 ounces of cherry juice or cherry-flavored placebo drink twice daily for 8 days. And then on the fourth day, the participants performed arm curl exercises. Those who drank the cherry juice experienced significantly less pain, soreness, and loss of muscle strength. I thought this was a pretty simple and good study. Well, there's a real good reason this is the case. Cherries are a very rich source of anthocyanins. It's a pigment in the cherry that gives them their rich color, and it's a particularly potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. And it has these wonderful properties that block enzymes known as COX-1 and COX-2. So they are COX-1 and COX-2 inhibitors. They're naturally occurring. And the best choice is tart cherries, which contain more of the anthocyanins than sweet cherries. And you can buy tart cherry juice in natural food stores. You can buy black cherry extract. It's very easy. It's inexpensive. If you're drinking the juice, diabetics should watch the sugar content, which is where the black cherry extract is a little better. So there we have a little information for you on how to soften up those sore muscles. Now, we have a lot more information coming. I hope you'll stay with us. This is Dana Lake, and we're talking about the paradigm shift in mercury, in fluoride, in additives, in vaccines. So please stay with us. We'll be back right after this break. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour, and reminding you to be here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Tune in to hear Kevin Passaro or myself talking to you about all things health. We try to dedicate it to your health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. And today we're going to talk about some of the controversies and what I call a paradigm shift, a real change in the way we view and the policies we now have about mercury in amalgams, fluoride in the water supply, additives and childhood behavior, vaccines, and I will go over my recommendations as far as diet avoids and diet includes so that you can have something you can start doing right away. So let's start with the mercury issue. As some of you know, I'm a licensed nutritionist, but I'm also a dental hygienist, and I've been in the dental profession since I was 17 years old. And at that time, when we put filling, when we handled fillings, we squeezed the amalgams out by hand when I was an assistant in the dental office. That's what we did. With bare hands, we mixed the silver and the mercury and squeezed it out by hand. Now, there's no dental office that would last very long doing that today. It's extremely dangerous, but that's been in my lifetime. And then gradually, safer and safer methods were used, and OSHA came in to the dental office and started getting concerned about the mercury that was outgassing from the amalgams that were being placed in people's mouths. And that mercury can be measured in the dental office. There are meters that can measure it. Well, it can also be measured in the mouth. There are meters that can measure it in the mouth. So OSHA regulates the dental office, and therefore, in the dental office, and this has been the case for over three decades now, when an amalgam filling is removed from your mouth, it is not permitted to be put in the trash, and some communities restrict it from going down the drains. The dental office has to put it in a special sealed container, and they have to pay a toxic removal service to remove it and what is called recycle it, remove the mercury, separate it from the silver. And this is an OSHA requirement to maintain safety of exposure because the amalgam, if it was left in the trash or left to sit out, outgasses. And that mercury gets in the atmosphere of the dental office, and that's damaging for the employees. But what about you and your mouth and that amalgam that's in your mouth? Well, it's just as damaging because you're absorbing it. And the FDA has finally stepped in and really has a different opinion than the ADA, the American Dental Association. For years, the ADA has said they're safe, there's no problem with them, but they are really not a science organization. They are a group, a professional organization that represents dentists. And the American Dental Association was actually formed around the issue of mercury. When it was first suggested that mercury be put in the human mouth, that these silver amalgam mixtures that we now call amalgams, some people call them silver fillings, but they're actually half mercury. When it was suggested that that be done, there was an uproar. People did not want one of the most toxic metals known to human beings put into their mouths. And the American Dental Association was born. And so it was formed around this idea of the mercury amalgam. Well, what's interesting in dentistry is more and more dentists are pulling away from using amalgams. And it's very clear that offices are going to have to put up hazard signs in the office explaining that people are in an office that uses mercury and it is a hazardous atmosphere. Now the FDA, finally, after 40 years, 40 to 50 years of toxicology evidence, has stated this past year, silver-colored dental fillings containing mercury may be harmful to pregnant women, children, and fetuses. The U.S. FDA said Wednesday after settling a lawsuit filed by several consumer advocates. The FDA in its settlement agreed to alert consumers about the risks on its website and to issue a more specific ruling for fillings that contain mercury by July 2009. So that's not far away. Millions of people in the U.S. are said to have the mercury metal fillings called amalgams in their mouths. And dental amalgams, as I said, contain mercury, which has neurotoxic effects on the nervous systems of developing children and fetuses, the FDA said on its website. Pregnant women and persons who may have health condition that makes them more sensitive to mercury exposure, including individuals with existing high levels of mercury bioburden, should not avoid seeking dental care, but should discuss the options with their health practitioner, the agency said. Now, this is a baby step. The FDA is not saying that they recommend the removal, because that's a huge political issue, and it affects the insurance companies, who are not going to be happy to have to pay for the removal of mercury amalgams. But that's the next step. It's a baby step. It's the paradigm shift. I have been waiting many, many years in my profession to see this happen. Now let's talk a little bit about fluoride safety and the issues. There have been fluoride safety issues brought up forever. I was in dental hygiene school in the 60s, and we learned a lot about fluoride. And I was shocked when I found out that there were deaths associated with fluoride. There was a little boy who was 5 years old who used fluoride toothpaste, and like most young kids, he ate it. And he also rinsed with a fluoride gel, and he got fluoride treatments, and he died from fluoride toxicity. Well, that was a first time for me that I started to challenge what we were being told in our education and what we were being told to do in practice. So I refused over the years as a hygienist to give fluoride treatments to children 5 and under because I could not prevent them from swallowing the gel. Now the ADA, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, the Institute of Medicine, and the FDA are on board with what has been a grassroots scientific effort for over 4 decades. And there's new research. And that research reiterates what previous research found. And it was ignored for many years, primarily because fluoride was doing a good thing. It was getting rid of decay. And anybody who opposed fluoride was against apple pie and the American flag. So the studies that were done were largely ignored. And I remember following these studies throughout my career. So recently, the CDC, the National Research Council, National Academy of Sciences, Institute of Medicine, issued a huge report, and you can go and read this report. You can go online. It's available. If you want me to send you that report by email, I'm happy to do it. You can contact me through www.danalake.com. That's my name, DanaLaake, two A's in lake.com. You can also just type in National Academy of Sciences fluoride, and you'll get the report. It will come up. So what's wrong with fluoride? What have they have found, and what the Institute of Medicine and the National Research Council, Institute of Medicine is part of that, babies and fluoride are overdosed from optimally fluoridated water supplies. Now, what this means is that with the current fluoridation, we are seeing up to 49% of over-fluoridation. Enamel fluoride concentration is not necessarily associated with reduced cavities, and this comes from the CDC itself. Fluoride excess leads to increased tooth decay. That's from the National Research Council and the CDC. Four major risk factors for fluorosis are the consumption of fluoridated drinking water, fluoride supplements, fluoride toothpaste, and infant formulas before the age of 6 years. This is in the Pediatric Dental Journal, and this was in 2000. Some of this is not brand new, but last year, 2008, this really came forward. So the NRC, National Research Council, has called for testing of the silicofluorides, the chemicals used to fluoridate water, in 92% of fluoridated water supplies because there was insufficient testing. Now, that's a shock to me. I knew the situation was not good, but I did not realize this. And the NRC has called for testing of these silicofluorides as soon as possible. And they have outlined this in that report I mentioned to you. And that's about a 500-page report. So it is very thorough. There's increased risk for thyroid dysfunction with fluoride in the water supply, and for bone damage from even low levels of fluoride in the water supply. That's from the National Research Council. Fluoride therapy for osteoporosis, which had been recommended for many years, actually increases bone fractures and is no longer recommended as a treatment. This is pretty shocking because it was considered a treatment for bone health. And fluoride is identified as a chemical of significant concern in the scientific consensus statement on environmental agents associated with neurodevelopmental disorders. And that is available online. If you want any of this information, you can email me. Studies linking fluoride to cancer and lower IQ are plausible. This is what the National Research Council has said, that it is plausible. There is a relationship there. That children's intelligence declines as their natural drinking water fluoride levels increase. And this was a study reported in May 2003 of the journal Fluoride. So that is a significant finding. And it goes on, the federal EPA's safety limit on fluoride in water should be lowered, according to the National Research Council, National Academy of Sciences. Levels of the cavity-fighting substance currently allowed under federal water safety rules cause dental fluorosis, mottling of teeth, increased decay, and health problems. So fluorosis may be just the tip of the iceberg of a multiplicity of neurological, immune, reproductive, developmental, endocrine, and genotoxic effects from fluoride. That is straight from the report. And fluoride in the water supply has been found to increase the risk of specific types of bone cancer in adolescent boys. The data was actually misrepresented to the public health official by the Harvard professor Chester Douglas, who supervised the study. He is a paid consultant to Colgate, and the data is significant and now included in the NAC report. He was taken to task by Harvard, who reported that he did not intend to deceive on the findings from his own graduate student's thesis work. So that's the beginning of what I call the paradigm shift. Stick with us, because we're also going to talk about additives and behavior vaccines and some diet guidelines for you. This is Dana Lake with Village Green Apothecary and the Essentials of Healthy Living. Please stay with us. We will be back right after this break. Hello, welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260 on this Saturday morning. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour, and we are halfway through our hour. We've been talking about some of the controversies. We talked about mercury in amalgams and the FDA being concerned about that it is neurotoxic to fetuses and developing children. Then we went and touched on fluoride and the concerns that the National Academy of Sciences has with regard to fluoridated waters and the side effects, the health side effects on individuals. And it's significant enough that the American Dental Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics have issued bulletins that fluoride should not be given to infants. And that is a real turnaround. This has been mandatory. Infants should have fluoride. And parents are warned to not use fluoridated water to make the infant formula. So I call this the paradigm shift. I've been a dental hygienist and a nutritionist in my careers, and I have waited many, many decades to see these things come to fruition. So it is exciting. And I would like to congratulate the American Academy of Pediatrics. I am so excited about the changes that have occurred, most of them, in the past few years. It was years ago, in the 50s, that the Academy recommended against the use of cod liver oil as being old-fashioned, and that turned out to be not correct. It was the omega-3 fatty acids that help with the development of the infant brain, and formulas were touted as being as healthy and as equivalent to breast milk. This is in the 50s. And parents were told they could have either option, that both were safe, and that is no longer the policy of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And the information was always there. It's my own personal opinion that the industry has had too much influence on the policies that are sometimes made. And so what happened is those infant formulas didn't have omega-3 fatty acids. And so children who were not breastfed did not get the fatty acid, DHA, which is essential for brain health. And the long-term effect on that from monkey studies, which has been shown to be true in human studies, is increase in hyperactivity, learning disabilities, ADD, what we would characterize as ADD. So I'm very happy to see some additional new steps that the American Academy of Pediatrics has said. As I said, it forbids the use of fluoride drops in infants, and it recognizes that a mix of artificial additives increases hyperactivity. I'll go over that report with you. It directs pediatricians to support parents of children with autism in complementary and alternative approaches, including dietary interventions and supplementation. This is huge. 5 years ago, the AAP meetings would list Autism Research Institute and Defeat Autism Now as quack organizations to be avoided and to warn patients against these therapies. Well, last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics asked to join with the Autism Research Institute Defeat Autism Now project and many other autism groups toward preventing and treating autism spectrum disorders. They attended the meeting, and there is an active, ongoing relationship. And the science behind the autism is phenomenal. There is no reason not to accept it anymore. I have a 346-page reference document showing the science. I'll talk about that in a moment, and I'm happy to send that to you, too, by email. So here we have the American Academy of Pediatrics making some really significant changes, and the bulletin to the pediatricians instructs them to not only support their parents and not be negative about complementary alternative dietary nutritional approaches, but to learn about those approaches with their families as they go through it. Very exciting. As you all know, I have co-authored a book called The Kid-Friendly ADHD and Autism Cookbook, The Ultimate Guide to the Gluten-Free, Casein-Free Diet. Our second edition has just come out. It's available on Amazon.com, and we are in the process of writing book number 3 on these biomedical interventions in the treatment, prevention and treatment of ADHD and autism. So a little plug for my book there. Now, I mentioned the additives, and I want to go back to that. This was a recent study, but I wish that Dr. Feingold was alive to hear these findings, because he was really considered a heretic in his day when he talked about salicylates and hyperactivity and diet and hyperactivity. Well, there was a carefully controlled study funded by a British food standards agency that simply found that food colorings and preservatives that are commonly in foods that children eat has the effect to change their ability to learn and concentrate. They are not as able to focus, and it increases hyperactivity. So the statement is, a mix of additives commonly found in children's foods increases the mean level of hyperactivity. And this was a 6-week period that the research was conducted, and the outcome was published in The Lancet. So based on this, the American Academy of Pediatrics has started warning their parents to avoid these. But when I look at what the American Academy of Pediatrics still includes as recommendations for children's diets, it includes things like hot dogs, which are loaded with additives. Yes, there are organic hot dogs, organic turkey hot dogs, and also the tater tots and the commercial foods. This is where the additives are. And the bottom line is, you got to get back to what's natural. Now, let's tackle the next subject, which is always controversial, and that's vaccines and some of the issues in autism. And I will tell you up front, vaccines do not cause autism. But that is not the question. The question is, do vaccines, the neurotoxins present in vaccines, and they still are present in vaccines, and the frequency with which they're given, the conditions under which they're given, is the child sick, taking antibiotics, etc., have a profound influence on the development of a whole host of neurodevelopmental delays, including autism? The answer is yes, in certain susceptible individuals. And that's the issue there, certain susceptible individuals. And that is something that the professions are starting to try to tackle. How do we identify those children who are at higher risk? Certainly a family that already has a child with autism or developmental delays. But we also know that children in families that have autism, high degree of allergies, already there's hyperactivity or schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, are at higher risk. And there are tests that can be done, because what we find in our autism population, and they are tested very thoroughly, is that they have defects in sulfation and methylation. And what does that mean? It means they don't get rid of or detoxify the toxins they're exposed to very easily. So those toxins that come through vaccines, the environment, and the food build up in their bodies. And then when their immune systems are challenged, it's called total load. If they're on antibiotics and they're sick and they get a series of vaccines at one time, they can get as many as 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There can be a lot of vaccines at one time. And if that happens, this can tilt the balance in those children. And this is not about not vaccinating. This is about vaccinating safely. And you can stretch them out. Many pediatricians insist on this mechanism. The whole reason for so many vaccines so soon is to protect the children in the lower socioeconomic range, because parents of those children will tend to go to the pediatrician for in the first 3 months. It tapers off after 6 months. So the load of vaccines has been recommended to be given at a higher frequency in that time. And all we're saying is that it's too many too soon, and that we want to green our vaccines. We can do it. It's done in certain European countries, and the same companies that make the vaccines for the United States make them in safer forms for European countries. So we're not sacrificing the safety of vaccination. That's extremely important. And there's some issues that you may not know. The children get 48 doses of 14 vaccines before the age of 6. And it's important to learn about those vaccines and read about them. There's the National Vaccine Information Center. That's www.comnvic.org. They're a very responsible organization. We're responsible for getting a consumer member on what I call the Vaccine Committee of the FDA. It's Vaccine and Biologics. And that's been an important change. So what can you do to increase vaccine safety? Number one, don't have your child vaccinated when they're sick. Wait till they're well, no fever. Spread out the vaccines. Make sure there's no thimerosal in the vaccine. Talk to your doctor about this. Ask to see the vaccine information sheet on it, or ask which vaccine you're going to get, and you can go online. Those are available on all medications, including vaccines, so you're an informed consumer. And as far as vaccine safety, it's interesting that the CDC has said for years that there's no connection between vaccines and autism. However, when pushed to provide the data upon which they based that, they refused. It took several years for Congress to mandate that they release the data for an independent scientific assessment, and the independent assessment found that the opposite was true. Their data showed a relationship. And when challenged, the CDC director, Dr. Julie Gerberding, admitted to a startling string of errors in the design and methods used in the CDC's landmark 2003 study that found no link between mercury and vaccines and autism, ADHD, speech delays, or tics. The CDC, and listen to this, acknowledges that the study findings were weak, not useful, uninformative, and potentially misleading. Stay with us. We have more to talk about. This is Dana Lake with the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the final segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake. I've been your host for this hour, and thank you for joining us this Saturday morning. I want to remind you to go on myvillagegreen.com, and you can talk to the experts online, but you can also go visit them at Cedar Lane, the apothecary in Bethesda. They have wonderful helpers there, lots of experts. It's a fabulous place for information, books, supplements, and it is a pharmacy. So it's one-stop shopping. Excuse me, folks. Cheering at a game. I'm losing my voice. All right. We were talking about vaccines, and I talked about the vaccines and the combination frequency and neurotoxin contents, and I always get asked about that. They do still contain aluminum, and mercury is still in many vaccines, 25 micrograms per 0.5 milliliters, and that's the DTaP, the DT, diphtheria and tetanus, multi-dose vial, tetanus, and several brands of the 2006-2007 influenza formulas, and the meningococcal multi-dose vial. Now, this changes and may have changed even as we're speaking, and you can go online. Just type in the amount of mercury in vaccines. You will find some sites, or go to the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC. That's www.nvic.org. And if you're interested in this whole issue of not just vaccines, but the treatment of autism, related disorders and autism, you can type in autism studies and related medical conditions, and you can get this wonderful 346-page description of autism and mitochondrial dysfunction, GI inflammation, neuroinflammation, The treatment of inflammation, oxidative stress, infections, aluminum toxicity, dietary intervention studies, correcting nutritional deficiencies, how to diagnose and treat, immune dysregulation, environmental toxicities, thimerosal toxicity, and find out about which vaccines contain thimerosal and aluminum as of March 2008. That's in that report. And it's available online, Autism Studies and Related Medical Conditions. And you can get that through TACA. That's Talk About Curing Autism Now. That's Jenny McCarthy's group. So definitely go online. And if you haven't had a chance to write this down, you can contact me through my website, www.danalake.com. And there are two A's in Lake, Dana Lake, D-A-N-A-L-A-A-K-E. I also want to invite you to attend the Defeat Autism Now Spring Conference in Atlanta, April 16th and 19th. And that's the Autism Research Institute. This is a conference, I believe this is the 10th or 11th, and I'm an autism educator for Defeat Autism Now, so I will be speaking there. You can register, go on defeatautismnow.com, or just type in Defeat Autism Now, and you will be able to find out. There are sessions for parents. This is one of the very few medical organizations that allows parents to attend science sessions. The parents are the partners in this effort. There are also private sessions for doctors and nurses, practitioners, healthcare, licensed healthcare practitioners who are learning and beginning to treat autism spectrum disorders. So this is their training time as well. It's a wonderful, wonderful conference, and I think you will be glad. Go online and see about the previous conferences if you want to know about it. Now, let's talk a little bit about diet and some wind-up. Years ago, about 30, 40 years ago, I always had sugar as my number one avoid. It is no longer number one. It is actually about number six on my list. So what is worse than sugar? And sugar's pretty bad. But what we've noted is that from 1909 to now, sugar has declined in intake, but what has increased exponentially is artificial sweeteners and high fructose corn syrup. And that high fructose corn syrup is a problem. So why are these all problems? What do they do that is so damaging? High fructose corn syrup is a double whammy. It's a double sugar. What it does is it raises sugar higher. When I say sugar, I mean blood glucose. It raises it higher and faster than regular sucrose. Regular sucrose is half fructose and half glucose. And I've told you before that refined grains turn into pure glucose the more refined they are, and they actually raise blood sugar higher than sucrose, which is only half glucose. So high fructose corn syrup has been associated with increase in weight, obesity, cellulite, metabolic syndrome, and half of the high fructose corn syrup that is used in American foods has mercury contamination. Now, even if they get the mercury out, high fructose corn syrup does not belong in the human diet. And the groups that are using it and manufacturing it are on the aggressive. They are sending materials. I know you've seen some of their ads that it's natural, it's good for you. But none of the independent studies indicate that this should be used. It is pre-diabetic. Or as I facetiously say, if you want to get fat, if you want to get diabetes, consume as many products as you can with high fructose corn syrup. Read your labels, HFCFs. It is in ketchup. It is cheap. It is what they use to sweeten just about every processed food. Go organic, they don't use it. And read the labels. And if you can't understand the words you're reading, it shouldn't be consumed. Now, what else is on that list that is ahead of sugar? It's artificial sweeteners. We've talked about this before. There is absolutely no doubt that artificial sweeteners increase weight gain because they disrupt calorie regulation. They actually slow metabolism down so that you go into calorie conservation, meaning that you gain more weight with lesser calories. and they provide no nutrient density. They result in overeating. Rats fed these artificial sweeteners versus rats fed table sugar. Now, remember, they were given the exact same diet, but one had sugar, one had artificial sweetener. They consume more calories. They gain body fat. They gain body weight. And the picture is unbelievable. These rats were so fat they could hardly walk. And the only difference was artificial sweeteners. And then there's some wonderful human studies done at the University of Texas on 1,500 people. And they saw in regular sodas, there was a 47% increase in weight. But in diet sodas, there was a 57% increased weight. So here you have it, that diet sodas are worse than regular sodas, and regular sodas are not good for you. All those sodas are high in phosphorus. They deplete minerals. They're electrolyte antagonists. They lack nutrition. They're empty calories. And I tell parents, if you're not going to give your kid a martini, they shouldn't be getting sodas. Now, Splenda, not so splendid. And let's understand why Splenda's not good. It's a chlorinated artificial sweetener, and it doesn't occur naturally. And the company has really misled you about what sucralose is. That's the actual name. That's what sucralose is. The common name is Splenda, but the actual scientific name is sucralose. And animal studies show it reduces gut bacteria by 50%. And we've already talked about how important gut bacteria are, and that we Americans have much lower levels of the good bugs in our gut. We have 10 trillion human cells, but we have 10 times that amount, 100 trillion bacteria in our gut that we have to survive. So we are one part human and 10 parts bug, if you want to think of it that way. So Splenda increases body weight, reduces the absorption of specific medications, and causes increased calorie consumption. So what else is on my hit list? Hydrogenated fatty acids. Mutant plastic fatty acids had no place in the human diet. Brought to us by the USDA, FDA, American Heart Association, NIH, etc. For 40 years, we were told this was what we should eat. They are well established. It's always been known they increase infertility and fetal death rate and fetal complications. Inferior breast milk quality, big cause of cardiovascular disease. They are pro-inflammatory, pro-cancer, contribute to neurological disorders. They cross the placenta. They get in the brain. They are antagonists to omega-3 fatty acids. So we're in trouble when we're doing all of those things. So what are the avoids? Besides those, deep-fried foods, sugar, too much caffeine, processed foods, refined grains, additives, fake foods, reaction-provoking foods, and any food you crave is a food that's not good for you. So go organic, eat wholesome foods, eat real foods, and stay tuned every Saturday, to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I want to thank you for being a listener and for getting in touch with me and letting me know what you like to hear. Remember to take care of yourself and at least one other person and go green with Village Green. This is Dana Lake and Village Green, wishing each and every one of you good health and a really great day.